they've both indicated that they like the bill the way it is, as amended on the hand-engrossed version, and are ready to see it go out. There is in the file a letter from the Association of Community Mental Health Program Directors indicating the cost control provisions that the bill would implement, and some letters from some local folks, and a letter from, I think, the Mental Health Division, which says they approve the bill as written, but propose the amendments that have been incorporated. And then the division urges passages of the bill with those recommended changes.
Are we in work session, Mr. Chair?
Yes, we are in work session.
I'll move the bill then.
All right, Senator Hamby moves Senate Bill 631, as amended, as shown by the hand-engrossed copy, to the floor to be passed. Discussion.
Senator Wire. This isn't the bill that we sent out. We sent the other bill out a while ago that had to do with dangerously mentally ill.
This is a different one.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Call the roll, please.
Redman?
Aye.
Brockman?
Aye.
Hill?
Aye.
Wyatt?
Aye.
Dry?
Aye. All right, that carries. Okay, now...
Mark takes over.
Can I have the witness list up here, please, and just see where we're going to go on our remaining bills? Got a little more than we can handle, I think, here today.
We haven't been taking very long on each bill, either.
No, let's see who we've got. I think we've got... All right, Judge Beatty's here apparently on two bills, is that right, Judge? You're here on two bills? Okay. And then we've got a witness here on 597 from Portland. So, and then, let's see, Sheriff Burks, are you here on 913, is that it?
Yes, I am.
From Morrow County, well, all right. I think we'll take that bill right now then. 913.
Mr. Chair.
Counsel.
Members of the committee, I'm handing out a revised staff measure analysis that also has reference to LC amendments that are in your file, and I'm also handing out a hand-engrossed version of the bill.
All right, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Sheriff Burks, and I'm representing my office as well as the Oregon State Sheriff's Association. To my right is Under Sheriff Denton from Morrow County. The intent of bill, we're here to speak in support of Senate Bill 913. We have not had the opportunity to look at the hand-engrossed version, but we would like to explain to you what the problem is and what we're seeking. As I've testified at least before, we're trying to fine-tune our jail operations, and almost every sheriff in the state has a problem with an overcrowded jail, and some of us do not have jails, as is the case in Morrow County. In the last few years have had overcrowded conditions, and we are seeking to have more flexibility in housing prisoners. The current law is explicit and I think is not being followed in many cases by some sheriffs, and I can give some examples as what's happened in the past. One of the examples is that we're under a court order, a court cap, and we can only house up to 207 prisoners in our jail. We had as high as 366 before that cap was invoked. We searched around and found some empty jail space in the state of Oregon. It did not happen to be an adjacent county, and we sought to contract with that county and went to our legal counsel, and he said the legal authority to contract with that county does not exist in the current statutes. Likewise, the Linn County, for example, took a pre-sentence prisoner to a northern coastal county jail and housed him there because he did not have space in his jail, and yet he wanted that prisoner held, and he had a gentlemanly agreement but not a contract, and certainly not a legal contract, as the statutes have been explained to us, to house that prisoner there. He was challenged in court, and it's my understanding that case is in the Supreme Court right now under consideration. And I hope at a work session to have Mr. Jackson Frost from Lynn County here to explain exactly what that case is all about, because he was the one that presented that case to the Supreme Court, as I've been told. Morrill County does not have a jail, and they had a particular problem when they housed a prisoner in another county out of state, which was very close to them, and I would let Under Sheriff Denton explain that particular situation to you.
We lodged a prisoner in Benton County, Washington, in order to, because we didn't have any place else to put him, quite frankly, and that resulted in a lawsuit that is now in the federal courts and the appeals courts. So far, we've had two judgments in our favor on that. Our main problem is that we don't have any facilities in our county or corrections facilities, so we rely on surrounding counties and their facilities. We utilize Umatilla County, which is 60 miles from us. Their jail is currently running at capacity, and we can't count on them. And it is also quite expensive to lodge with them. We were able to work out a deal with the Benton County authorities in Tri-Cities across the river from us, and also Franklin County, which have two large correctional facilities there. And they agreed to take our prisoners, and we have been lodging sentenced prisoners over there. And we would like to have law protection for doing this. As I said, we've had one lawsuit filed against us, and we fortunately have had none others.
This particular bill, as I read it, wouldn't have helped you in that situation.
Not in that particular situation, but we would also, we're in a position where we have no place to lodge pre-sentenced prisoners as it is now. And the problem with doing that is that there's no protection there. I'm not sure what else to tell you.
Okay, I think we understand your point, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Any questions of either Sheriff? Yes, Senator Wires.
Sheriff Brooks, are you aware, or maybe I should ask counsel this, if there's any case law on the question of keeping people contiguous close to their home? I know that when there was discussion of buying out Rancho Rajneesh, there was a lot of talk, including from our governor, then governor, about that would probably not make federal muster because of having people distant from their families. So I realize this is for a shorter time than a penitentiary sentence, but I'm just wondering if there's any.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wires, the only case law that I'm aware of is the one that's currently being litigated in two counties, and one is in the federal courts, which is Morrill County. And that is in the Court of Appeals, as I understand it, in San Francisco right now. The other case is currently, as I was told this morning by the Sheriff of Lynn County, he thought in the Supreme Court of the State of Oregon. And I came directly back from meeting with him and Ben, so I haven't had a chance to verify that with the District Attorney Jackson Frost yet. There could be some case law there.
In both of those cases, though, the prisoner was taken to another state. I think Senator Wires is...
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. The one was taken, I believe, to Tillamook from Lynn County.
Oh, that was not another state. Northern California.
No, I'm sorry. If I said that, I misspoke myself. It would be Northern Oregon Coastal County, and I believe it was Tillamook. And in that case, it was argued, I'm told, that the prisoner was available for his attorney, and this was a pretrial situation, by virtue of all they had to do was ask the sheriff to go get him, and the sheriff had agreed to do that any time they were needed. Just a simple matter that they had reached their capacity and they had a prisoner that needed to be jailed, or some other one was going to be turned out, and they chose to go to the nearest available jail, which turned out to be, I believe, Tillamook, which was a considerable distance away.
Do you know if any of the cases that are now up on appeal involve the issue of contact with family, employers, and that kind of thing?
I do not know that. I believe the issue in Morrow County is a civil, is a, in the federal court, has to do with, there's some extradition process involved in that.
They claimed there was an illegal extradition when we brought them back to Oregon to go to court.
Circumstances in that case, as I understand it, was that the individuals were, there were two of them, I believe, and they were housed in Multnomah County, and there was a court order secured to return them for trial. The sheriff went after those individuals. He had no jail, he had no place close to hold them, and apparently the adjoining counties in Oregon were full, and Benton County, which is just across the river, and I believe even closer to the county seat, was available, so they took the prisoners there and then brought them over the next morning and had the trial, and the prisoners were contending that they were illegally, well, I shouldn't get into what they contended, but it had to do with not following the extradition process.
Those are all the questions I have. I'd be interested in knowing if there is any law in that area, how close, how far you can move someone before you've separated them too much from their family and their employer and that sort of thing.
Well, I think we ought to be able to call upon the lawyer who represents the Association of Oregon Counties. He could probably find some time to give us a legal memo on that. I believe I'll call on him to do that.
Mr. Chair, if I could ask a couple of...
Yes.
If I could ask either the witnesses to address two problems. One is the problem of out-of-state transferring a prisoner to another state, and the second problem is the distinction between pretrial and sentenced prisoners and the transfer. On the out-of-state issue, let me give you an example. Let's say the state of Washington has a warrant outstanding for a traffic offense. Because of the nature of the offense, of an Oregon resident, because of the nature of the offense, they've decided they don't want to go through the expense of extradition. You transfer the prisoner because of overcrowded conditions or because of non-availability to the state of Washington, where they then have process or jurisdiction over the person. The second question on the pretrial versus sentence, do you foresee problems regarding accessibility of counsel? And if so, how much of your problem would be relieved if the transfer authority was limited to sentenced prisoners?
The portion on warrants in the other state was addressed by in Washington's case by their Attorney General's office. They received an opinion that that Oregon, if they lodged a prisoner in Washington, that prisoner was still Oregon's. In fact, if we were contracting with them, the piece of ground he was standing on there was Oregon.
Hey, listen, sir, I don't think that we've got a record of your name and address, so would you just take the time to put it on the tape now? Name and address, please.
My name is Verlin Denton. I'm undersheriff for Morrow County Sheriff's Office, Heppner, Oregon.
Got a nice, beautiful old courthouse there, too. Nicest in the state.
It's quite a courthouse.
Out in the one in Fossil, I think, are the newest courthouse.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes,
Senator. In the case that you mentioned where you took the to Washington, how long was that individual to stay in jail?
He was at the time a state prisoner. He was an escapee from the state prison.
Okay.
And had committed some crimes in our county, and then was returned to the state prison. And when they brought them back for we had them in Multnomah County because we didn't have any room for them. We had to bring them up for trial for the next morning, and they just spent the night in Benton County.
Okay.
So it was just an overnight thing. It was just, we didn't have any other place to put them.
Oh, I see.
Mr. Chairman, if I could answer.
Time may not even be in that situation, and time may not be. I was thinking in terms of if you're going to have somebody overnight, you usually wouldn't ship them off, say, if it happened and a crime occurred in Linn County or they're convicted in Linn County, you wouldn't ship them off to Ontario or somewhere like that. But in that situation, an overnight stay might be justified at some distance away. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Sheriff Burks again. In answer to Mr. Carlson's second question, and first, I guess, addressing the first issue, there is a volume of, I'm sorry, Mr. Kramer, question. There is a volume of material, legal briefs, about 3 inches thick on Monroe County's case, which does address the issue that he talked about it being Oregon soil. The chief deputy didn't talk about it being Oregon soil, even though, I guess legally, even though it was in the state of Washington. And we could provide that to legal counsel. The second question, however, is a difficult one. It has to do with whether, if we were precluded from, as I understand the question, from doing this with pretrial, but only sentence. I believe it would cause us a problem, but that would solve part of the problem, even if that was granted to us. Currently, we can do that, but we have to go back and get a court order specifically, and the judge has the authority on the current statutes to sentence to any jail in the state, as I understand the law. The sheriff does not have the authority to transport that person on his own, so he has to go through the legal process to get that done. It would be a lot more convenient for us if we had that authority for sentenced prisoners. We would like to have it also for the pretrial prisoners, recognizing the problem that exists, to have them at least available for their counsel. And I think that can be worked out when it gets close to trial, or when we're informed by the counsel they need their prisoner. I think we can work it out to bring them back so they can be available. But we simply, many of us, do not have enough space to hold our prisoners. And we're scampering, trying to find available space. Occasionally there is space, and the problem with just contracting with one jail is they may have space today and tomorrow they may not have any. And so you have to cast about and find an open bed somewhere.
Questions? All right, gentlemen, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Right off into the sunset now. We'll see you later. Paul Snyder, he's going to bring us up this proposed language that I asked him about 6 weeks ago in connection with the liability limits for counties. Was that it, or was it the prejudgment interest he was going to do for us?
Maybe I should testify by mail, Mr. Chair.
You I'm might Paul have Snyder. To one of these days.
Sounds like they're making arrangements for that. Preceding witness.
Go ahead, Paul.
Mr. Chair, I'm Paul Snyder, representing Association of Oregon Counties. I really have nothing to add to the testimony that
Good.
Was just provided by Sheriff Burks, just to say Association of Oregon Counties supports the bill.
All right, that's fine and dandy. And I'll, how about Senator Wire's inquiry? Do you suppose there's a way you could find out whether there's any, I'll state the question, it was a legal issue of people who are packed off across the state to some other jail while they're awaiting trial, and whether there's any potential problem with that kind of a thing. I suppose it's the access to counsel issue that's the most pertinent. Is that right, Senator Wires?
Yes, and I was also thinking about family contacts, employer contacts.
Well, there may or may not be something going on out there on that, but I could see a distinction, I suppose, between the pre-sentence and the post-sentence situation. And yes, counsel.
Mr. Chair and Senator Wires, the answer has been decided in the federal context. Under federal constitutional law, for sentenced prisoners, for administrative purposes, a prisoner can be transferred anywhere in the country, so long as it's not an issue about a prisoner being punished. I don't know the answer to the issue as to pretrial, and I don't know the answer to the issue under Oregon law.
Well, Paul can help find it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'd be pleased to check that.
Yeah, see what you can find out on that, Paul.
That'd be fine.
All right, thank you very much. Well,
close
the hearing on Senate Bill 913. I'm going to try to be, try to take care of everybody here if I can, but I'm going to open the public hearing on House Bill 2550. We've only got one witness on that that signed up, at least. Judge Beatty, come on up. It looks to me like a pretty straightforward bill, House bill.
Mr. Chairman, excuse me.
Go ahead, sir.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Jack Beatty. I am the Vice Chairman of the Criminal Justice Council, appearing on its behalf. 2550 is designed to correct the problem that occurs when prisoners are, or offenders are arrested but not printed, not properly booked, either because they have been served by citation, which is used frequently now due to crowding, or because they're in some other way printing has been overlooked. The mechanism we've provided as a fail-safe is simply to have, at the first appearance in court, the judge inquire as to whether or not the prisoner has been properly booked, has been printed, and the criminal information filled out. If that has not been done at that time, why, the law enforcement officer attending, who is generally the district attorney in the covered cases, which are felonies and two classes of misdemeanors, sex cases and drug cases, the law enforcement officer is required to then make arrangements to have the prisoner booked. As you realize, that printing is the method we have now to ensure the accuracy of identification straight through the record system and the data system. And that's the reason for doing this. There are substantial deficiencies in this now which render the system inaccurate because of the failure to print.
Where's the statutory language that limits this to drug and felony cases? I mean, felony cases except drug and sex, did you say? Whatever.
Yes. That appears in ORS 181 010 subsection 3, which defines, appears in the written memoranda before you, defines the crimes for which criminal information is required as any felony or misdemeanor or other offense which involves criminal sexual conduct or any crime which involves a violation of the Uniform Controlled Substances Act.
All right, I wasn't, okay, I wasn't looking at the amendments here. And, okay, any questions? All right, stay right there. There's no other witness on 2550, so we'll go.
Mr. Chair?
Yes, Counsel.
Linda Zuckerman from the Judicial Department is here. She indicated that as long as she could get her letter of support into the record, that she would not need to testify. So we'll have this letter copied. It is copied and it's being distributed.
All right. All right, that's fine then. So we'll close the hearing on 2550, go to 2551. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, 2551 is designed to correct the deficiencies in the present data collection system. At the present time, the backbone of the data collection system is a three-part form, an example of which is attached to my memorandum, which you have before you on the back of it. This is provided pursuant to statute by the state police. The law enforcement agency which arrests an individual is required to initiate the criminal information report in those cases which I've already referred to, felonies and misdemeanors, and the covered misdemeanors, sex, drug, crimes. That form provides on the cardboard bottom or the back of the report, provides for detailed printing and for the initial descriptive information, and frequently has a photograph attached to it. That form is required presently to be forwarded by the state police, or forwarded to the state police by the law enforcement agency at the time the arrest is and booking is initiated. The two top forms, the flimsy, so-called, are then forwarded by the law enforcement agency to the district attorney's office and to the court where prosecution occurs. At the present time, in the case of covered misdemeanors, when the case is terminated and a final order is entered in the trial court, the court is required to fill out the misdemeanor or fill out the disposition form and send it to the state police. In the case of felonies, which used to be the responsibility of the court system, I think two or three sessions ago, the responsibility in felony cases was shifted to the 36 different district attorneys. And the district attorneys in felony cases are responsible for preparing those forms. Now, as we I've set forth in the memoranda, in our investigation during the past year of our entire data system, information system, we found that the data system has simply broken down because of inaccuracies in this reporting mechanism. As indicated in the exhibits from the report, which are attached, report of the council, there are four pages attached. The reporting has been extremely erratic. It has not functioned accurately for many years. There are people who are not printed. There are reports which are prepared on people who are not the subject of reporting. The reports which should go in for felonies and covered misdemeanors, in many respects, are not going in. Some counties are preparing them in full. Most counties are preparing them only in a percentage of cases. In some counties, it's been extremely low. Now, when the state police get them, all the data the state police get on disposition of cases is what comes to them in these disposition reports. That data, in turn, goes to LEDS, it goes to the FBI, and it is from that data that the nicely bound reports on what happens in criminal cases in Oregon is prepared. And that information is simply not accurate. It is so inaccurate that it is simply unusable as a method for rational use and prediction of what is going to take place as well as what is taking place now. Now, we have some major steps that are moving through the legislature at the present time for the next biennium. The Governor's Task Force on Corrections is, with which I'm sure the committee is familiar, has the responsibility for, in the next 18 months, assuming the legislation passes, preparing predictions on space, citing space for additional custodial space. They are going to have to depend on accurate predictions in order to do that sort of thing. We need this data system functioning, and we need to make it function by the 1st of July. The council itself is presenting to the legislature a recommendation and legislation that for sentencing guidelines in order to be able to effect some rational control over the input and outflow from the state justice system. And again, that will be dependent. Doing this job accurately with accurate predictions, it makes it absolutely imperative that we have this data. Now, what the council has proposed in this legislation is that the responsibility be shifted back to the court in felony cases from the district attorneys. And we propose this for two reasons. First, because it's the court's action that is being reported. The court is a centralized function with a centralized administrative capacity. The 36 district attorneys, of course, are not centralized in any way. So it would be makes much better sense to see that this is done accurately through the court system. Secondly, the court system, through the judicial information network that is being established, ultimately, in another 3 years, we'll be able to handle all of this electronically in a much easier manner. At the present time, only a percentage and a minority percentage of the counties in terms of numbers of conviction are in the state judicial information network. And the completion of that, of course, depends on ultimate funding of the rest of the system. We can't wait for that electronic system to come into existence. We've got to do it with the mechanism we have at the present time. Now, the State Court Administrator's Office properly has raised a question as to what kind of additional staffing will be required on this. Justice Jones and I, as trial judges of some fair amount of experience, assured the House Committee that we think this can be done without any significant additional workload by working it out administratively. Our proposal is to handle this administratively is simply to work out the mechanism of having the disposition reports attached to the charging instruments when they come from the district attorney's office into the hands of the court, have the court number stamped on that, the disposition report attached to the file jacket, and then have it completed by the trial court staff, the judicial assistant clerk or bailiff who serves that trial judge. Return, when it's filled out, the case is ended, it'll be returned to the state, to the trial court administrator, who in turn will forward those reports weekly to the state court administrator, who then, in his office, will simply funnel those to the state police. We are working presently with the state police, Multnomah County, district attorney, the police agencies, to work out the mechanics of this. We expect to review this again with the state court administrator's office in the coming week, and it is our judgment that we can do this without any significant fiscal impact. The state court administrator's office, reasonably enough, says they'd like to see this all in writing before they take our word for it, and we think that's a sensible position on their part. And what we are suggesting to the committee is that you hold this bill for a week or two while we work out the bugs on this and discuss it with the necessary people to be sure we can work it out and that it doesn't have to